the next stage of the trials. Quest, the second trial. Objective complete. Reach the center of the city of Fallen Echoes. 1 of 1. Quest complete. 100 Iron Spirit coins have been added to your inventory. Ritualist's umbrella has been added to your inventory. The other members of Jason's team also received items. Humphrey and Clive both had personal storage spaces for them to appear in, while Sophie, Neil, and Jory's rewards dropped out of the air. They started comparing items.
"Mine is a belt that accumulates power as I move," Sophie said, already slipping it around her waist. "I can unleash the gathered power as one attack."
"Got a wand that conjures and throws metal needles," Jory said.
"Can you use wands?" Neil asked.
"Yes, I have the same power to use items that Clive has," Jory said.
"But I'm not high up in the magic society, so I can't requisition magic vehicles whenever I like to go swanning about the Delta."
Clive gave the back of his head an embarrassed scratch.
"If you all got such good stuff, why did I get an umbrella?" Jason asked.
"An umbrella?" Humphrey asked.
"Yeah," Jason said, pulling it out of his inventory. It did look high quality, with a shaft and tines of a pale blue, lightweight metal. The cloth was thick, and a much darker blue than the shaft. When Jason opened the umbrella, he discovered a magical diagram drawn onto it in silver.
Item: Ritualist Umbrella. Iron Rank. Epic. A device made to improve the convenience of using the rituals in the field. Tool: Umbrella. Effect: when open, will float in the air and follow the person who opened it. Effect: repels liquid while opened, while extracting breathable air from surrounding liquids. Can be used for underwater travel, but provides no means of propulsion. Effect: harmonizes nearby ambient magic while opened, sufficiently to make iron and bronze rank rituals easier to enact. The use of nearby magic can disrupt this effect.
"I take it back," Jason said.
"This thing is awesome."
"We might want to deal with this later," Neil said. "We're drawing a little bit of attention." As Neil said, the nearby adventurers were all looking in their direction.
"Good looking out, Neil," Jason said, as he put the umbrella away.
Not long after, the attention of the adventurers was diverted from Jason's group to their actual purpose in being there when Shade appeared, but not just one of him. There was one Shade for each adventure team present.
"Congratulations," the Shade said.
They spoke quietly, but their voices carried through the square, eerily layering the words.
"You have survived the second trial, and the time has come for rewards."
The Shades handed out black awakening stones, one for each adventurer. There was almost no sensation of pressure from it in their hands, as if it wasn't really there. The black of the stone wasn't as much a color as an absence, the same light-devouring darkness Jason's cloak could achieve.
Item: Awakening Stone of the Reaper. Unranked. Legendary. An Awakening Stone sharing affinity with the Reaper. Consumable. Awakening Stone. Requirements: Unawakened Essence Ability. Effect: awakens an Essence Ability. You have 3 Unawakened Essence Abilities.
"Highest rarity," Clive said with excitement. "That means the list of abilities it could awaken is much smaller than normal, usually restricted to just 1 or 2 types."
Jason and Clive were not the only adventurers with the power to identify items, and as Susurrus moved over the crowd as word spread that they had all received a legendary awakening stone.
"You seem excited for someone who can't actually use his," Neil said to Clive.
"Clive's more interested in new knowledge than new power," Jason said.
"Exactly," Clive said. "Do you know how rare this opportunity is? Information about the rarest essences and awakening stones is incredibly limited because only so many people ever get to use them, and those people might have no interest in helping the magic society fill out their records. But look at how many people we have here. We'll get so much information on who got what power across different races and essences. This is going to be great."
"What will you do with your stone then?" Humphrey asked.
"Until we have better records," Clive said, "I can only assume that an Awakening Stone of the Reaper will best fit Jason."
Clive lightly tossed his stone to Jason.
"Thanks, Clive," Jason said brightly.
"Well, I know you've been holding off on new Awakening Stones for a while," Clive said. "Also, an extra sample of what an Outworlder gets from it would be very appreciated."
"Now your motivations become clear," Jason said.
I suppose next you'll be asking for chunks of flesh, to compare Outworlder flesh with regular people's.
That's not a bad idea, now you say it, Clive said, rubbing his chin thoughtfully. Something out of the torso would be best. Maybe slice a bit off the internal organs.
Not a chance, Jason said.
We could heal you right back up, Clive said. Right, Neil?
As long as I get to watch you cut the bits off, I'm willing to participate. I said no.
We could put you into a magical sleep, Clive said.
You so much as try it and I'll do you to the Adventure Society for necromancy. I'm in the same position of having awakened all my abilities, Jory said, pulling the conversation back on track. I think I'll give my stone to Belinda, since she's going to be getting her own essences soon.
Thank you, Sophie said.
The next trial, the Shades said, arresting everyone's attention, will test wisdom or courage. For those who chose the path courage in the beginning, your boldness shall be rewarded now. The test of wisdom is now before you, and you may take it without fear. Should your judgment be insufficient to the task, there is no danger in failure. You shall simply be led from the trial grounds in full safety.
The tower the adventurers surrounded was blank brickwork, with a loud grinding of stone that began to change. Bricks pushed out from the walls, or retreated back, forming a series of rectangular doorways. Every second doorway opened, retracting slowly up into the ceiling to reveal dark passages beyond. The others remained closed, the brickwork marking their positions.
Those who selected courage, the Shade said, choose a door and step through. Each must face their trial individually, and you must each choose a door for yourself and yourself alone.
Is it just me, or does the weird voice thing make it all the more portentous? Jason asked. Don't get me wrong, the ancient tower of trials in a ruined interdimensional city of assassins has portent enough to be going on with, but it really seems to cap it off.
Is he always like this? Sigrid asked.
Pretty much, Humphrey told her.
Sigrid looked from Jason to Valdis, letting out a light shudder. Shade's words had brought up a buzz from the adventurers, who, having just reunited their teams, were required to split up again. It was not long before the first person stepped forward to accept the challenge. Predictably enough, it was Valdis, with others quickly following. They only made up a fraction of the gathered adventurers. Only one in five or six had chosen the path of courage from the start. The adventurers picked their doors and passed through, the stones sliding slowly back down behind them. In one case, however, the door slammed back down, not behind the adventurer, but on top of him, easily crushing him to death.
The test of wisdom is for those who have already chosen courage, the Shades announced. Those unwilling to take the test of courage will be allowed to leave in safety. Those who seek to move forward without proving their courage will see that choice also demonstrates a failure of wisdom.
A number of other adventurers that had been moving forward scurried back to the main group. When the last of the adventurers had chosen a door or returned to the group, the remaining doors closed and the alternate doors opened.
The trial of courage is not for the uncertain, Shade warned. You will each encounter an entity known as a nightmare hag. These are diamond rank entities from the astral that have no physical existence in this place and cannot harm you directly. What they can do is warp the reality around you, manifesting that which you fear most. If you are unable to face this fear, it will most certainly kill you.
Short lines of dark energy appeared on the ground, all around the tower. Rising up from the lines was a series of archways, each made from a single piece of glossy obsidian. The dark lines from which they emerged rose up to fill the archways with consuming darkness. Each archway was now identical to the one that first brought the adventurers into the city.
These shadow gates will return you to the archway towers, the Shades announced. If you do not wish to face the next trial, these gates will return you to the archway towers. You may then use the tower gates to leave the city. If you so wish, you may take this final day to further explore the city. But know that if you remain here when the sun sets tomorrow, then here you will stay.
I'm out, Neil said, as soon as the Shade stopped talking. I'm not foolish enough to think I can beat out all these other adventurers, and I'm not going to die trying.
Also, getting killed by your own fears is literally the worst way to die I can imagine.
As am I, Clive said, for exactly the same reasons.
Me too, Jory said. Between the recipe I found and enough plant quintessence to fill a wheelbarrow, I've gotten everything I could want and more from this place.
I'm not going either, Sophie said. I've managed to avoid some unpleasant fates over the last year, and I have no interest in some magic ghost lady throwing me into everything I fought so hard to escape.
That's fair, Jason said. Just you and me, Humphrey?
Yes, Humphrey said. My family has sheltered me from a lot. I've never been confronted with the kinds of challenges you faced, Sophie. If I'm going to be a good adventurer, I need to face up to my fears, whatever form they take.
Quest, the third trial. The trial of courage will put you face to face with your greatest fear. Resolve will see you through, while a lack of it will see you dead. Objective, successfully confront your greatest fear. Reward, random magic item.
I know what my greatest fear is already, Jason said. It isn't a threat to me. That suggests it isn't actually your greatest fear, Neil said.
No, Jason said. It is. See you all on the other side.
With that, he marched off for the open doors. Humphrey nodded a farewell and did the same, along with many other adventurers. They each picked a doorway and walked through. The doors closed behind them with finality. Humphrey regained consciousness, sprawled in soft earth. His head rung and his body ached. The air was full of noise and thick with the taste of blood. Shrieks of fear and pain were punctuated by the screeches and roars of monsters. He scrambled to his feet, casting his gaze around. He didn't know where he was at first, then realized he hadn't recognized his home because it was half collapsed and on fire. He was outside the main building, surrounded by the corpses of people he recognized. Some were burned, others savaged by monsters, but all lay dead where they fell. He could see a half dozen monsters just from where he stood, and heard many more beyond. He started moving, calling his sword into his hands. He began a slaughter, one monster after the other, but there was no end to them. As he fought his way through the grounds, he found only the monsters and the dead. His team, his friends, his family. Finally, he found his mother, clinging to the last vestiges of life.
You were supposed to be the best of us,
she accused with a ragged, dying breath.
You weren't strong enough. You failed us.
As he watched her die, monsters charged in on him. Instead of fighting, he let his sword drop from his hands, casting his gaze around at the monsters lunging at him. No, he said, flatly, his face stony and eyes sharp. I won't let this happen. I will be strong enough. The world around him shimmered like a mirage and vanished, leaving him in the dark. He took out a glowstone, revealing his location as a circular room made from the same brickwork as the tower. Shade was standing nearby, as was a cage with silver bars etched with gold runes. Inside was a figure that looked a lot like Jason in his shadow cloak, although this creature's cloak of darkness seemed ragged and torn. There were two ways out of the room, both stairwells alcoved into the walls. One led up, the other down.
Congratulations on passing the third trial, Shade told him.
Jason followed the stairs up into a dark, circular, empty room. There was another stairwell, alcoved like the one he stepped out of. Down the stairs and into the room came a person. Jason himself, but different. His features were more handsome, with a greater resemblance to his brother. His combat robes were more elaborate and in shades of dark purple and gold instead of grey. At his hip was a sword that perfectly matched the one on Jason's own. On his head was a simple crown of dark gold. The two Jasons moved closer, sizing each other up.
My humble beginnings, the other Jason said. Fancy meeting me here.
But you knew you would. Just like you know that one day, you'll be me. You aren't inevitable.
Aren't I? Maybe if you gave it all away and led a quiet life.
But we both know you won't. You've got that hero complex, that need to feel important. Other Jason laughed.
You can't hide it from me, he continued. You'll follow this life and you know you'll have to make the hard choices. You'll keep making them because deep down, you like them. You like how important it makes you, that you're the one in the middle of everything. And sooner or later, that leads you to me. What's the saying? He who fights with monsters should look to it that he does not become a monster. Don't pretend you've read Nietzsche, Jason told his double. You got that from a video game. I'm you from the future, the double said. I've done all kinds of things you haven't. But you haven't read Nietzsche, Jason said. Turning evil didn't change me that much. The double laughed. Fair enough. But I'm not evil, you know. I've just lost my illusions. There's nothing wrong with illusions. Justice is an illusion. Civilization, morality, they're illusions we all agree to share because they make us better. Do they really? You think people won't disappoint you? They always fall short. I have the power to fix that, and you will too. Is that what the crown's about? You're some kind of tin pot dictator? Something like that, other Jason said. Democracy is a pack of gullible idiots being exploited by the selfish and immoral. When you have the power to take control, you can fix things. Can I? Jason asked. You were right about people always falling short, and that includes us. I've fallen short plenty, but you've clearly fallen all the way down. So you think now. How many bad days are you from becoming me? That's from Batman, Jason said. Not even good Batman. You don't like the killing joke? I forgot what a social justice wanker I used to be. All right, we're done, Jason said. I'm definitely not turning into you. Are you sure? Other Jason asked, moving closer with a sinister grin. He stopped as they each realized the duplicate was taller. Then other Jason gave off a smirk. Looks like I'm better than original recipe in every way. Do you want to measure? Don't even, Jason said. You know Kato's still taller than us. Oh, I dealt with our dear older brother. The man married the love of our life. How are you not over that when I am? Also, if you break up when you're 19, it wasn't the love of your life. It was the love of your adolescence. You keep telling yourself that because you're too weak to do anything about it, other Jason said. You'll get stronger, never fear. Really? Never fear? During a fear trial? Evil me has some weak jokes. Hey, I'm just a physical manifestation of your fears, other Jason said. Anything I do is on you. Aren't you meant to be menacing me? Would it work? No, it's good that I seem to have gotten over that tuny phase. Yeah, it got pretty bad there, other Jason conceded. If you're the future me, did I ever get home? I'm not actually from the future, other Jason said. Right, you're a manifestation of my potential future self. A third figure shimmered into place. It was a figure made of darkness in a ragged cloak. Kill him, it hissed at the duplicate Jason. Ooh, mum's not happy, other Jason said. That's the... what was it called? Jason asked. Nightmare hag. Yeah, that's her. She doesn't really have control of what she conjures up, and she's not very bright. Why would I kill you before you've had the chance to turn into me? That's like your fears vanquishing themselves. Kill him, the hag hissed again, the sound filling the chamber. The duplicate's hand twitched in the direction of the sword at his hip, his face twisted with sudden fury. His hand finished the movement to his sword, which he drew, turning a furious gaze on the hag. No one tells me what to do, he roared, lashing out with the sword. It slashed through the ephemeral hag, and both she and the duplicate vanished. In their place were Shade and an empty cage. Quest, the third trial. Objective complete. Successfully confront your greatest fear, one of one. Quest complete. 100 Iron Spirit coins have been added to your inventory. True Light has been added to your inventory.
Congratulations on passing the third trial, Shade said, as Jason took out his new item to examine. It was a fist-sized lump of golden crystal.
Item, True Light, Diamond Rank, Rare, True Light of the Sun, trapped in a single moment, consumable, crystallized light,
effect, consumed to release the true light of the sun.
Jason raised an eyebrow at the rank of the items, although he wasn't sure how useful it would be. Maybe it produced some kind of powerful burning light, but he couldn't use it to tell.
Was the test meant to go like that?
Jason asked, putting the item away again.
It is what it is, and goes how it goes, Shade said. Assassins adapt to their situation.
I'm not an assassin.
Yet here you are, taking an assassin's trials.
That's true. I've been thinking something was off about this whole thing for a while.
Chapter 58. Irreconcilable Ideals. Shade led Jason upstairs into a square room. The stairs emerged from an alcove in the middle of one wall, with a sealed door on the opposite wall. The walls to either side were covered in square panels, marked with what looked like scrambled segments of constellations. On the walls and floor were images of constellations that were whole and in order. Jason was about to enter the room when Shade stopped him.
Once you enter this room, Shade warned, the next trial shall begin.
Quest, the fourth trial. The trial of intellect will test whether your mind is not just sharp enough, but calm enough to save you from a grisly fate. Objective, successfully solve the puzzle room. Reward, random magic item.
The virtue this trial will test is intelligence, Shade continued. If you fail to pass this test within the time limit, you will die.
Again with the succeed or die?
The Order of the Reaper needs those who are not just intelligent, but who can use their intelligence under pressure. An intellect that fails when it matters the most is worthless. Though the Order may be gone, it is their trials that remain and their standards you must reach.
So, what's the time limit?
That will become clear once the trial begins. If you wish to withdraw at this point, you may. I will call a gate and allow you to leave. Once you have accepted the trial, however, I will not do so again. The remaining questions, then, become how smart do you think you are, and are you right?
Jason took a long, calming breath as he looked into the room. That's a tricky question, isn't it? Jason said. People have a tendency to overestimate their own intelligence. I'm sure I'm no different. I mean, I think I'm pretty cluey, but do I really believe that deep down?
You have the day to complete the final trials, Shade said as Jason pondered how much of his self-confidence was warranted. You have time to consider.
No, I'm good, Jason said, rolling his shoulders as he steeled his resolve. If I'm going to be the kind of adventurer, the kind of person I want to be, I'm going to face tougher challenges than this. Shade stepped aside and Jason went to move forward, then stopped. Actually, he said, I think I will take the time to stop and consider. Shade was an indistinct silhouette, yet Jason somehow got the sense of a wry smile coming from the shadowy invigilator.
Very well, Jason Asano. When you are ready to begin, step into the room.
Shade vanished, and Jason turned to the room. He looked over the patterns of constellations on the ceiling and the floor, then compared it to the walls. From the looks of it, he had to slide the square wall panels to make the correct patterns, based on the complete patterns on the ceiling and floor. He looked over it all, checking for matches and differences, seeing how the patterns paired up. The pattern on the floor was different to the pattern on the ceiling. His first assumption was that the trick was figuring out which wall would match which pattern and then matching them. But as he kept looking, he realized that neither wall had the correct pieces to match the patterns. Now that he realized it wasn't about matching the images, Jason looked at the constellations for other patterns. Finally, his face cracked a huge grin. The constellations, he realized, were just a disguise. The stars themselves made up a numerical pattern. Looking over the walls to make sure, he spent a goodly amount of time making sure he could make the whole room fit the pattern, then stepped inside. The moment his foot touched the floor, a stone slab started descending to seal the alcove, locking him in the room.
The patterned walls then started rumbling, slowly moving towards one another with a rumbling of stone.
Wall crush puzzle room!
Wait, focus, Jason. He rushed to one of the walls and started sliding the panels. They were heavy, but slid well, apparently well lubricated in spite of their centuries of disuse. Having already mapped out the patterns he needed, he worked quickly as the wall pushed slowly towards him. He finished the first wall and, after quickly checking over his work, moved to the other. The walls were closing in slowly, but the room was already a third smaller than when he began. Seeing that, he realized that stepping outside the room was a required part of the test. Not only would he be pushed for time if he came in not already knowing what to do, but the enclosing walls were already hiding portions of the ceiling and floor patterns. He went to work on the second wall, practice allowing him to move faster. He slid the final panel into place with relief. But the walls didn't stop moving.
What?
He asked, looking over the walls in a panic.
This is right. This is right,
he told the empty room. His eyes skittered across the patterns.
This is wrong.
He madly started sliding panels while admonishing himself.
Four comes before five, idiot. You are not getting crushed to death because you don't know how counting works.
Having corrected the pattern, the walls stopped, the room half its original width. Jason let out a shuddering breath as the walls retracted.
Quest, the fourth trial. Objective complete. Successfully complete the puzzle room. 1 of 1. Quest complete. 100 iron spirit coins have been added to your inventory. Summoner's die, form, has been added to your inventory.
Shade appeared next to him.
Congratulations.
No worries, Jason said. The whole wall-squeezing thing was a bit panic-inducing, but the puzzle wasn't that hard. More of a third-person, narrative-driven shooter puzzle than a puzzle game puzzle. The kind where, as soon as you solve it, it turns out the bad guys were following you all along, and the room fills with faceless mooks to kill. Jason looked around, hopefully. The last test isn't a bunch of faceless mooks pouring in here, is it?
No. Shade said. Anyone can learn to fight, which is but a facet of what the Order required from its members. You have demonstrated wisdom in accepting the tools to survive, capability in crossing the city, courage in confronting your fear, and intellect in solving the puzzle room.
The door at the end of the room slid upwards, revealing another stairwell. The final virtue to be tested is resolve, Shade explained. Members of the Order of the Reaper would be required to operate alone for extended periods. Far from home, often living false lives, it is easy to lose focus on the mission. Only the most resolute were allowed into the Order. Proving their resolve was always the final test of the Order.
That doesn't sound at all ominous, Jason said.
Up the stairs, then?
Yes.
Before moving on, Jason pulled out his new item for a look. It was a clear gemstone cut with 12 facets, with each facet having a different symbol engraved on it. His translation ability told him what the symbols meant, each one the name of a different animal.
Item, summoner's die, form, iron rank, growth, legendary. An eldritch tool for altering the nature of summoned creatures. Tool, die, requirements, summoning power. Effect. Rolling this die while enacting an iron rank summoning power will randomly alter the form the summon takes. Can be used in conjunction with summoner's die, element, and summoner's die, power. Using more than one die of the same kind will negate the effects of all dice.
Damn, Jason said, looking over the description. Growth item. Plus, it's a D12. Shame I don't have a summoning power.
He put it away and followed Shade through the room and up the stairs into a huge circular chamber with a high ceiling. It was blank brick, except for the ceiling, where numerous holes, wide enough for a person to fall through, led up and into darkness.
That's an impressive ceiling, Jason said.
I mean, all those holes can't be great for structural integrity, but there aren't any supporting pillars in a room this big. Architects must have it easy, with magic to fall back on.
The final test, Shade said. As with the first, there is no danger, only a choice. There is no puzzle, only the will to move forward. There is no obstacle. You need only the resolve to do what you must in order to go forward.
A metal clanking echoed down through the holes in the ceiling, followed by the descent of frosted glass cylinders, suspended from chains that lowered them to the floor. One cylinder came down from each of the dozen of holes, coming to rest on the floor. There was no light, but Jason's ability to see through darkness allowed him to see clearly. Inside each cylinder was a human-shaped silhouette. All at once, the cylinders cracked open, one person dropping out of each, deposited alongside a cloud of frosty air. The people were unconscious, bound hand and foot with a power suppression collar around each of their necks. Most were humans, elves, or celestines, but there were others scattered through as well, smolders, runics, leonids, and draconians. They were all dressed for combat, although none had weapons.
"What is this?" Jason asked.
When the Order was testing their initiates, the initiates were forced to fight their own friends and companions to prove they were willing to do whatever the Order asked of them. To represent the Order is to subordinate your own principles to what the Order requires of you.
Let me guess, Jason said. They were actually fighting a projection or some kind of facsimile, just enough to prove they were willing without throwing away good initiates.
It was as you say, Shade told him. When the churches attacked the Order's final hiding place, they did not take it easily or without cost. These people are some of the prisoners that were taken from the attacking forces and imprisoned in this place. They were placed here as a new test of resolve.
You want me to execute these people?
Yes. They have been held here for centuries, trapped in a magical state where they do not age, do not think, do not feel, and do not die. The companions who left them behind are no doubt mostly dead and gone. Now it is their turn. Show that you have the strength of will to put down the Order's enemies.
Quest, the fifth trial. The invigilator of the trials has asked you to execute the Order of the Reaper's enemies. Objective, show your resolve. Reward, random magic item.
Not a chance, Jason said. You would show them mercy, Shade said. But they had no mercy to show. They did not restrict themselves to slaughtering the Order's membership. Most of the people living in the final fortress were servants whose only crime was a lifetime of diligence. Their families, their children, these people spared none of them.
Which makes them terrible people, assuming you aren't straight up lying to me, Jason said. I'm not going to execute a bunch of people on your say-so.
Jason moved to the closest person, kneeling down to examine her. She was wearing robes styled for combat like his own, but white with brown flourishes. They were dirty and stained, but he could still make out the symbol of the healer embroidered into them.
The healer, he murmured to himself. That didn't match the picture that had been painted of intolerant churches striking out in ignorance.
Revisionist history. How shocking.
She was unconscious, her skin pale, clammy, and shivering. Jason put a hand to her face and felt her cheek.
If this is some kind of projection or double, it's a pretty damn good one, he said. I'm not going to kill these people.
They are deserving of death.
Says you, who I don't know that well.
It is this or leave.
Jason stood up, turning to face Shade.
Then I choose leave. I'm not killing them, so open up your magic gate, because I'm done. Also, I'm taking this lot with me.
They are not yours to take.
Tough.
You think it is your place to decide their fate?
Jason stepped right up to Shade, face to the spot Shade's face would have been.
Mate, you want resolve? Then here it is. Get to helping, get to stopping me, or get out of my bloody way. That's your choice to make.
Very well, Shade said. You may take them.
Really?
Jason asked.
I was kind of expecting you to kick my ass.
The Order never wanted those who would follow directions blindly. The ability to make judgments in the face of inevitably shifting circumstances is one of the most important traits of the Order's membership. The resolve to decide the best course of action and follow it through, even against the Order's own directions, was always a crucial virtue. The Order wanted thinking, intelligent agents, not blindly obedient soldiers.
Wait, you're saying I passed?
Yes.
Quest, the fifth trial. Objective complete. Show your resolve. One of one. Quest complete. 100 Iron Spirit Coins.
have been added to your inventory. Immortal Crest has been added to your inventory.
Immortal Crest? Jason wondered.
Item, Immortal Crest, Iron Rank, Rare. An object that allows the soul to mark the body. Consumable, Tattoo. Effect, when applied by a mystical tattooist, this item will draw out a soul crest. This item can only be used on an Iron Rank Essence user.
You can get magic tattoos?
Jason minimized the window and turned his attention on Shade. I can take all of these people with me, he asked Shade.
All those who survive. You are not the only one to reach the final trial, and there are other rooms like this.
If refusing to kill them is a pass, you're going to let people kill them just to fail?
Killing them does not mean failure, Shade said. This is not a test of the willingness or unwillingness to kill. It is a test of resolve, which can be shown in many ways. The refusal to bend, even if it means giving up what you came for. A determination to perform any act in pursuit of a goal.
Is it even possible to fail this test? Jason asked.
I know people tend to only go halfway with things, but I have to imagine anyone who gets this far isn't what you'd call irresolute.
When truly challenged, many falter when they should follow through or compromise themselves when they should hold to their principles.
What's your sample size on that, mate?
Didn't you say this was a new test?
Would you like to give up the success you have achieved and face a new trial?
No thanks, mate. Your trials are flawed. Your order and I have irreconcilable ideals. And yet here I am.
It's like this whole thing is...
What?
Shade asked, as Jason trailed off.
Nothing, Jason said.
What comes next?
Shade was silent for a long moment, Jason getting the sense of an assessing gaze from the featureless shadow.
Next, Shade said, is the prize. The legacy of the Order of the Reaper.
Chapter 59. Meanwhile, 2 weeks ago in Greenstone. Thalia Mercer was ill at ease. Most of the city's Iron Rankers had left a few days earlier and would be gone for weeks. She had hoped, in the quiet that settled over Greenstone in their absence, to start getting through to her son. She and her husband both had made so many mistakes with him, which had almost cost them their son. The mysterious cultists and the horrific thing they implanted into Thadwick had brought home just how disastrous things had gotten. They resolved to put Thadwick onto a better path. In their private parlour, Thalia was on a lounger with her husband, Beaufort, leaning into him.
I'm not sure I should have let him go,
she said, showing an uncertainty she would reveal to very few. Hours ago, Thadwick had left the estate for the first time since the starseed had been purged from him.
Keeping him here only would have driven him further from us, Beaufort said. He has two bronze rankers with him.
Thalia nodded.
I chose Kyle and Jeffrey carefully, she said. They're the most reliable people in our household guard. They're still registered adventurers, although they are no longer active.
They normally work the Spirit Coin Farm, right?
Beaufort asked.
Yes. I pulled them off it to give Thadwick the most reliable protection I could, including from himself.
There you are, then, Beaufort said. They won't let him do anything too self-destructive. Do you know where he went?
One of his old city brothels, Thalia said. I had a tracker placed on him with ritual magic while he was still recovering. He doesn't know it's there.
There was a hammering on the door.
Lord Mercer! Lady Mercer!
It was the voice of their family butler, Crivens, in an uncharacteristic panic. Thalia and Beaufort went to the door together.
What is it? Beaufort asked.
My lord, my lady, a representative of the Adventure Society just arrived. She claims to have important and time-sensitive news, but refuses to speak with anyone but you directly.
Where have you put her? Beaufort asked.
She approached the manor discreetly, my lord, even bypassing our alarms and protections. I thought it best then to place her in the black parlour.
Well considered as always, Crivens, Beaufort said.
Thank you, my lord.
The black parlour was underground, a clandestine meeting place for the family's most private meetings.
The only access was from a heavily protected elevating platform that only a few family and the most trusted and requisite staff could access. Thalia and Beaufort took the platform down and found that the Adventure Society representative was no less a personage than the deputy director, Genevieve Picot. The elderly elf looked perfectly comfortable amongst the black cushions and dark wood of the black parlour, rising to greet the pair when they entered.
"Deputy Director," Thalia greeted as they all took seats. "I was told your business was urgent."
"Quite so," Genevieve said. "I won't waste time on niceties. You are, I take it, familiar with the Office of Monitoring at the Adventure Society?"
"Yes," Thalia said. "Their primary task is to monitor the tracking stones of the adventurers in case any of them die."
"Yes," Genevieve said. "Roughly an hour ago, the office brought to my attention an issue with two of the stones. The adventurers linked to them weren't dead, but the stones were no longer able to track them, something we have seen before."
"The five who were implanted with star seeds," Thalia said.
"Yes," Genevieve said. "As best we can tell, their auras have changed sufficiently that the aura imprint we have for them is no longer effective. I was distressed to discover that the two adventurers in question are no longer active, but now work for your household." Thalia and Beaufort shared a dread-filled glance.
"Kyle and Jeffrey," Beaufort said.
"Yes," Genevieve said. "Why did you guess them?"
"Because they are out with our son right now," Thalia said.
"What about Thadwick?"
Beaufort asked.
"He was never attuned to a new badge after the expedition," Thalia said. "They aren't tracking him, but I am."
She took a stone from her pocket and tapped it twice.
Shortly thereafter, Krivens arrived on the elevating platform.
"Krivens, get the team I have tracking Thadwick. The whole team, bring them here as quickly and as quietly as you can."
Thalia and Beaufort probed Genevieve for more details, but there was little she could tell them, beyond that it was being handled with as much discretion as possible. Both the Adventure Society director and the interim director from the inquiry team had made very clear to the monitoring office how to handle this kind of situation. The people who were tracking Thadwick appeared with unfortunate haste.
"We were already looking for you, my lady, my lord. Several minutes ago, the tracker on young Master Thadwick stopped working."
Thadwick returned to the Mercer estate with his two guardians in tow. They had barely made it through the gate before Thadwick's mother teleported to greet them. The two guards bowed their heads respectfully, but a disgruntled expression crossed Thadwick's face.
"Thadwick, dear, I do hope you found your time out relaxing."
"It was fine. I'm going back to my room."
"Of course," Thalia said. "If you need anything, don't hesitate to ask."
"I know how servants work, mother."
"I meant me, dear. I thought maybe we could spend some more time together, your father as well, as a family."
"Whatever," Thadwick said, walking around her.
"You go ahead, dear," Thalia said. "I'd just like a word with your boys here."
Thadwick stopped and turned around.
"You want them to tell you everything I did?" he accused.
"Let me save you the trouble. I went to Old City and I had some women. One, then a pair, then one again to round out the afternoon. Are you happy?" "As long as you enjoyed it, dear. I'll have someone from the Church of the Healer swing by and deal with anything you might have picked up."
"No," Thadwick said. "I already paid someone."
"I think it would be best if I got someone in, dear."
"I don't care what you think will be best. I told you it's fine. Why won't you ever trust the things I say?"
"I'm sorry, dear. If you say it's all right, then I'll say no more."
"Good," Thadwick said, then turned and stormed off. Thalia watched him go, then turned to the two bodyguards.
"So?"
"As you said, my lady, he was quite aggressive, but the owner knows to keep their mouths shut and was paid to see they remember that."
"Very good," Thalia said. "If anything else comes up, I want to know immediately, however minor it seems."
"Of course, my lady."
"Back to your post, then. I want my son taken care of."
Thalia arrived in the Black Parlour, where Genevieve and Beaufort were still present.
"Well?" Beaufort asked.
"That is not our son," Thalia said.
"You think he's been seeded again?"
Beaufort asked.
"This is something else," Thalia said.
The personality is right on, but I know his aura, both with and without the seed. It was off at a fundamental level. What came home is some kind of double he is projecting into from some other location.
Is that even possible? Beaufort asked.
It is, Thalia said. We can use whatever that thing is upstairs to track back to our son, but whoever is on the other end will know right away and get on the move. They can only be so far away, though, so if we have people ready to act in the city, we have a good chance of catching them.
If that really isn't our son.
It's not, Thalia said with certainty. Our son is out there somewhere, and he needs us.
Then we have to act now, and we have to do it right, Beaufort said. We're not losing him again.
Thalia nodded, her face racked with guilt and pain. He hadn't even recovered from what they did to him before, and they're victimizing him again. Why do they want him so much?
Hopefully, we can answer that when we get him back, Genevieve said. What about the bodyguards?
Their auras are definitely off, but it's subtle, Thalia said. My guess is they're seeded and have something to mask their auras to appear normal. I could only tell because I know their auras and have strong enough aura senses to see through it.
We need to get moving on this, Beaufort said. With Kyle and Jeffrey compromised, we can't mobilize our own people without giving the game away. The Ketterings have people in Old City. I'll talk to them about getting people ready to move once we trace Thad's location.
I'll prep the people I had tracking Thadwick, Thalia said. They have the expertise to backtrack from whatever or whoever this double is to our boy.
I'll return to the Adventure Society, Genevieve said. I'll update the director and interim director and marshal what forces I can put together quietly. I'll coordinate with the Kettering family.
We don't want these people realizing that we're going to move on them, Beaufort said. Thalia, as soon as our people are confident they have a way to trace Thad, we strike. Kyle and Jeffrey were stationed outside Thadwick's room. Located in the main family section, on the top floor of one of the towers, the hallway was large and flooded with light from a ceiling largely made of glass. The two guards seemed to sense something was wrong. Although Thalia was walking casually to her son's room, something about the way she carried herself tipped them off. The result for Kyle and Jeffrey was horrifying, as the things that had been implanted in them took effect. Their bodies split apart, segmenting at the joints, knees and elbows, wrists, ankles, shoulders, all tearing audibly apart. Both men died instantly, rictuses of pain and terror frozen on their dead faces. Their bodies were now strung together by wires, like poorly made puppets, complete with jerky movements. The guards had gone from people to monstrosities of flesh and metal. What concerned Thalia the most was the aura coming off the two corpse puppets. Moments ago, they had been living bronze rankers. Now they were horrifying abominations giving off silver rank auras. Thalia flashed back to the expedition, with its construct monsters and bizarre cultists. That was the moment everything started falling apart with her son. The magic surged up inside her. Thalia Mercer was a silver rank adventurer, and far from a weak one. She might not be the equal of her friend and teammate Danielle Geller, but she was still a powerhouse in her own right. With the might, potent, swift, and onslaught essences, in terms of pure explosive power, she was a match for any adventurer alive, and was certainly too much for the two gangly, awkward creatures that had moments ago been people. Under the barrage of a furious Thalia, they were soon ripped apart, their metal components just as torn to pieces as their flesh. Thalia didn't bother to open Thadwick's door. She blasted it to splinters with a special attack and moved in. There she found the facsimile of her son in what looked like a state of melting. It was as though the clay that had seemed like flesh was oozing off an iron skeleton. Thalia immediately called in the ritualists. She had to yell at them to focus as their attention was arrested by the dead flesh puppets and the iron clay doppelganger degrading in front of them. Thadwick had been in the ritual circle for hours, connected to his mystical double, but now he had been pulled out of it. A pair of ritualists methodically eradicated any element that could be used to track their location. All around them, other people were packing up supplies into dimensional bags, stripping the building of anything that could be used against them.
"What was that?" Timos yelled at Thadwick.
Timos had quickly come to regret going along with Thadwick's aggressive self-recruitment.
Rather than be a useful pawn within the aristocracy, he was a one-man disaster. Timos had been operating in Greenstone for years without so much as a sniff of detection. Yet within hours, Thadwick was bringing everything down on their heads. From openly approaching him, to failing to immediately giving the game away, Timos was mentally berating himself for not just killing Thadwick and his bodyguards, then dumping them in a canal. If he had been thinking straight, he assured himself, he would have never risked so much on a petulant teenager. Timos was a man who valued methodical patience, but their allies in the Church of Purity were ruining everything with their haste. Despite the cult's warnings that they should wait until the monster surge, the church was insistently impatient, forced them to move forward before everything was fully in place. Their precipitous actions left them with little margin for error. Every mistake threatened to snowball into disaster. The degree to which their activities had been uncovered, even in such a provincial area as Greenstone, spoke volumes. Timos was, for once, grateful he wasn't assigned to one of the more crucial regions. The troubles they would face in a city full of top-shelf adventurers made him shudder. Even then, he would happily trade a dangerous enemy for an ally like Thadwick. "Our people have been working in plain sight for years," Timos admonished Thadwick. "Years! You can't manage more than a few hours." "I warned you that my mother had strong aura senses," Thadwick spat back. "You're the one who was so certain this fake would work." "What was the last thing you saw before the connection was cut?" Timos asked. "People coming into the room after my mother. Two of her ritualists, I think." Timos snarled like an animal. "We have to move quickly," he said. "They'll be all over this place soon."
"Aren't your people eliminating the link?" Thadwick asked.
"You don't stay hidden in this city for as long as we have by assuming our people are better than Thalia Mercer's people."
"My mother isn't that impressive."
"Yes, Thadwick, she is," Timos said. "How you turned out this way is a complete mystery."
"If you knew how great she was, then why did you try and deceive her?"
Timos flinched, not happy to have his own contribution to the current disaster pointed out. "Because our methods weren't devised by locals, but bestowed on us from above," Timos said. "Unfortunately, your pathetic little city didn't warrant the best tools." Once the building had been divested of any trace of the cult and its activities, Timos led his people, including Thadwick, through an illegally made and well-concealed hole in the floor, down to the water utility tunnels running under Old City. The tunnels had stone walkways on either side, elevated above the water channels running through the middle. They hurried along, Timos consulting a map as they went. The dank tunnels echoed. Timos signaled a stop when they heard something. It was footsteps and whistling, coming from a person who emerged from a side tunnel and not far in front of them. He was of middle years, with loose overalls and a laden tool belt.
"Well, hello," he said. "You folks must be pretty lost to all wind up here, but old Frank will see you."
Frank never got to finish his sentence. His corpse fell as Timos's conjured spear vanished after leaving a ragged hole in Frank's throat. Timos kicked the body off the walkway and into the water channel before hurrying on once more. Days passed, and after the initial covert search, the city's resources were brought fully to bear. The Adventure Society and Magic Society, along with all the noble families, were recruited into the effort. The revelation about the nature of their enemy went from restricted to common knowledge, sending waves of concern through the populace. The information was released to make it clear that anyone harboring the enemy would face the harshest retribution. The search threw the city into chaos. The cult had been much more careful about their activities than the local criminals, whose clandestine operations were less thoroughly hidden. These were the ones flushed out by the search as the cult slipped quietly into the dark. The search was not helped by lack of competent Iron Rankers. They were usually the rank and file of the Adventure Society, but their absence due to Emir's expedition left only the dregs in Greenstone. They were called into action regardless, though many hadn't taken a contract in years. Thugs, criminals, arena fighters, most of which had been malingering at Iron Rank for years. They were pulled in nonetheless. Not every hidden cultist escaped. Adrus Dorgan was not only effective in determining when the search was wasting its time on ordinary criminals, but had at least some sense of the cultist's supply network. From his direction, a number of raids turned up cultists, although to little effect. When captured, the crystal stars exploded from inside them, leaving behind only uninformative scraps of shredded flesh. As the city was scoured, a series of bandit raids took place out in the Delta, killing people and plundering supplies. They were made against the holdings of numerous families, mostly soft targets who relied on the threat of retribution for security. The attacks against more secure locations made it clear who the primary target of the attacks was. Almost every raid that employed greater coordination on more difficult targets was made against Mercer family holdings. It was also plain that the attackers had insider information, hitting weak points in security, quickly and efficiently taking only the most valuable goods. The Mercers swiftly realized that Thadwick's knowledge of their operations, schooled into him by their father, was being used against them. They made rapid changes and, with the support of Adventure Society personnel, set a series of ambushes that ravaged the attackers. The fallen and the captured individuals exploded into crystal stars, which confirmed that the cult was behind the attacks. But there were no prisoners left to interrogate. In a small village on the outskirts of the Delta, Timos and Thadwick were in the common room of an inn. Like the rest of the village's inhabitants, the tavern owners were dead. "First you were useless as an infiltrator," Timos berated Thadwick. "Now your usefulness as an expert on Mercer family security is at an end. They've used what you know to turn the tables and set us traps. We've lost people, any one of which are worth 10 of you. So what I need from you right now is a reason not to kill you and leave you to your family to find."
"You wouldn't," Thadwick said.
"No?" Timos asked. "I'm pretty sure that if they found your body, the pressure on us would lessen. If only a little, it would be worth it."
"What do you even need to raid supplies for?" Thadwick asked. "What about those supply ships you've been using?"
"Are you an idiot? Look at who I'm asking. Adrus Dorgan has been relentless in digging out our supply lines. If it wasn't for our local support, we would be completely hamstrung, and I'm starting to suspect he knows who they are too."
"Who are they?" Thadwick asked.
"Do you seriously think I would tell you anything that could compromise us? I had you brought here in a closed carriage to make sure you didn't find some way to reveal our location."
"If Dorgan is the one pressuring your supplies, then kill him," Thadwick suggested. "What do you care about some crime lord?"
"That crime lord's daughter is the director of the Adventure Society, you idiot. You think things are bad now? We have every silver ranker who they can motivate searching for us. You kill the director's father, and you can be damn sure she'll motivate the rest. So for now, we need to supply from elsewhere, which was your family's stores because we had you. Now you're worthless."
"I'll show you worthless!"
Timos's backhand slap across Thadwick's face was punishingly loud.
"You'll shut your damn mouth," Timos said. "Like it or not, you're one of us now. That means you do what you're told until we figure out if you're even worth keeping alive. I cannot wait until your worthless city and everyone in it are dead."
"What?"
Thadwick asked.
"Oh, didn't I mention," Timos said with a gleeful grin. "Our astral expert, before he was stupidly killed off, determined that the next astral space we claim will be a little unusual due to some specifics of its connection to your world."
As he spoke, Timos moved towards Thadwick, slow and intimidating as Thadwick backed away.
"The bad news is the astral space is anchored too far away to reduce your city to astral dust, sadly. The good news is there will be a secondary wave of destruction that will scour this horrid delta with its wet heat and awful insects, right along with the city and the even worse vermin that infest it."
"My family," Thadwick said weakly.
"Have you not been paying attention?" Timos asked. He was standing close to Thadwick, who had backed into the tavern bar. "You betrayed your family, Thadwick. Making you one of us instead of a wet corpse was a mistake, but it's made now."
"My father," Thadwick said. "We could bring him into the fold." That wouldn't work, Thadwick. He's not an entitled child willing to grasp at whoever offers him the power he thinks he deserves. He will never serve the Builder. But you do. And one way or another, I'm going to get some use out of you.
Chapter 60. Take the Loot and Go. The last set of stairs led Jason into a hallway that looped around in a ring, a huge circuit he estimated to be almost as wide as the full tower. The outer wall of the hallway was the familiar stone, while the inner wall was solid glass, a single curved pane that looped in a giant circle. Through the glass was a library, softly lit by magical chandeliers hanging from the ceiling. The circular space was haphazard in design, with shelves set out at strange, seemingly random angles instead of in neat rows. Walking along the hall, Jason encountered other stairwells, much like the one he had entered through. He soon found other adventurers that had used them. His first encounter was one of the foreign adventurers he didn't know. They shared a wary nod of greeting and kept moving around the loop together. More people joined them, including Humphrey, Beth, Valdis, and Valdis's team member, Sigrid. "Were you all told to execute a whole group of people?" Humphrey asked. "Yeah," Jason said. "I thought I was done when I refused, but here we are." "Same," Valdis said. "I choose who I kill and why. I'm not some blind executioner." "I killed them all," one of the other adventurers said, his face harrowed. "It was awful, but I'll do whatever it takes. We aren't all princes and outworlders. Some of us have to fight up from nothing, even if it means soiling our hands to do it." Jason frowned but said nothing. While he had his own struggles, there was no question that many good things had been handed to him. There were 19 adventurers gathered together before Shade finally appeared.
"Adventurers," Shade said. "You have all passed the trials and proven worthy of the Order's legacy. Please step through the glass."
They reached out to touch the glass wall. Many had done so previously, finding it hard and warm to the touch. Now it was thick, like molasses, yet permeable, their hands passing right through. They all stepped forward, moving into the library. The group followed Shade through the oddly placed shelves to the middle of the library, where shelves gave way to tables. There were books stacked on them, collected into a series of neat, identical piles. What drew their attention, though, was the circular dais at the very center. Resting upon it was a heavy metal rack containing a single object, a large scythe, stylized well outside of practicality as weapon or tool. The blade was made from silver and the shaft from gold, inlaid with obsidian, polished to a gem-like finish. Shade reached out to touch one of the book piles.
"Each of these collections contains the collected teachings of the Order of the Reaper," Shade said. "How to move in silence, to walk unseen. How to pass through locked doors and trapped rooms unimpeded. How to kill. These are no ordinary books. For each volume there are two copies. One is a skill book, the other a written guide. The guides, however, are more than simply words on a page."
Shade picked up a book, holding it up to show a blue gem set into the cover. He touched the gem, and an ephemeral image of a man appeared.
"This is the first volume of The Way of the Reaper," the image said. "It details the first form of our order's complete martial technique. Turn to any page and I will instruct you."
Shade returned the book to the pile, and the image disappeared.
"Each of you have proven yourselves to embody the virtues the Order once held," Shade said. "Though the Order may be gone, its legacy can be secure through bestowing its knowledge to those who exemplify its ideals."
One of the Shadow Gates rose up from the floor.
"Please," Shade said, "each of you may take a collection and go. The trials are complete."
"Hold on," one of the adventurers called out. "What about the scythe?"
"What about it?" Shade asked.
"Who gets it?"
"No one," Shade said. "It remains here."
"We were told that whoever passed the trials would get the scythe," Valdis said.
I am responsible for enacting the trials in the ways with which I have been charged, Shade said. I am not responsible for what you have been told by anyone else.
Well, I'm going to take it anyway, another adventurer said. Call it a memento.
She moved forward to take the scythe, but the moment she moved to the dais, she dropped like a sack of meat, moving no further.
The scythe is an object of death, Shade said. To go near it is to die.
So you're saying we need to carry it out on a long stick, Jason said.
You are certainly welcome to try, Shade invited.
Rather than pick up the books as directed, the adventurers formed clusters, immediately entering into a discussion about the scythe.
There has to be a way to take it.
Maybe there's a hidden extra trial.
Obviously, but what would it be?
Maybe figuring out how to take the scythe is the trial.
Jason, Humphrey, Valdis, and Sigrid formed their own group.
What do we think? Valdis asked.
I'm taking the books and leaving, Jason said.
You don't want the Cloud Palace? Valdis asked.
I want the Cloud Palace, Jason said. What I don't want is that scythe.
Humphrey narrowed his eyes at Jason.
You've figured it out.
Nope, Jason denied. I just think that what comes with getting that scythe is trouble best avoided.
Really?
Valdis asked. You've come this far, and you want to give up?
Yes, Jason said. I'm going to take the loot and go.
You don't strike me as the giving up kind, Valdis said.
Watch me, Jason said. I'm giving up on the scythe, and I advise you all to do the same.
Jason took one of the stacks of books, placed it in his inventory, and walked through the obsidian portal. This drew attention. He was the first to do so, but no one moved to stop him. One less person meant less competition for the scythe. Jason emerged from the portal into another circular chamber he estimated to be the exact size of the library. This room was empty, however, aside from the dais in the middle. On it was an exact replica of the scythe he had already seen. The only light was right above the scythe, a plain, magical lamp that illuminated the weapon but left the rest of the room steeped in shadow. Shade appeared next to Jason, who spotted him through the perception power that allowed him to see through darkness.
I thought that portal was meant to take me out of here, Jason said.
Your time here is not done, Shade said.
You said we were done.
The final trial tests the virtue of insight, Shade said. The ability to see beyond appearances, to grapple with the truth.
I truly want to get out of here, if that helps.
Quest, the hidden trial. The invigilator of the trials has realized the revelation you've had about the true purpose of the trials. Objective, reveal the true purpose of the trials and claim the scythe. Reward, ?
Decline, Jason said to the screen. Decline, decline, decline.
This quest cannot be declined.
Bloody hell.
You have had insights about this place, Shade said. You tried to warn your friends away.
Just general suspicions, Jason said.
Tell me what you have realized.
I realize how much I want to leave, Jason said, his hand snaking into his clothes and around the escape medallion dangling from his neck on a cord. He pressed his aura into it, and it dissolved into nothing.
You have used Medallion of Escape. Trial Invigilator, Shade, has revoked your escape privileges. Medallion of Escape does not take effect.
Oh, that's just not fair.
I will hear what you have to say before you leave this place.
Let me out of here, Jason said. Hear that?
You have seen the truth, Jason Asano. Speak it, or you will not be released from this place.
How is that fair?
If someone promised you fairness, Jason Asano, they lied.
Jason groaned.
Do you have some kind of mind-reading powers? He asked.
I have merely been watching you closely along with all the others. You have had a revelation to which you refuse to give voice.
And if I promise to keep not giving voice to it, can I go?
Say it.
I don't want to say it. I don't want the ramifications. You could kill me for it. I'd kill me for it. Killing me would be the smart move.
You have greater value than as a corpse.
I'm not looking for new employment.
Before Shade could answer, Humphrey appeared through the archway.
I thought this was meant to take us out, Humphrey said.
Jason groaned again.
You figured it out?
Jason asked him.
Figured what out? Humphrey asked.
I was just taking your advice and getting out. Jason looked at Shade.
So everyone comes through here?
No, Shade said. I decided that you needed further motivation. Now your friend is trapped here with you for as long as you refuse to talk.
That just implicates him, Jason complained.
Then I suggest you speak up before I bring more of your friends to this place, Shade said.
Jason, what's going on? Humphrey asked.
Jason sighed.
It's about what this place is for, Jason said. Its true purpose.
What do you mean?
Think about what it took to get here, Jason said. Amir is an expert at finding things, and even he took the better part of 2 years, a huge staff, and a slew of hired adventurers to find this place and everything he needed to open it up. He's a gold ranker with exactly the right skill set and resources to get the job done, and it still took more time and money than we've seen since becoming adventurers.
So? Humphrey asked.
So, after all that, the only people who can get in here are Iron Rankers? But the grand prize, the scythe, is useless to an Iron Ranker aside from what they can trade it for.
What are you getting at?
The purpose of these trials isn't to bestow some legacy of a long-dead organization of murderers. Think about it. Centuries of stories, legends of an ancient order of assassins, and the grand treasure they left behind. Clues hidden around the world, finally pieced together at great time and cost.
Why?
To give some Iron Ranker a pile of books and maybe an overwrought harvesting tool.
Then what are the trials for?
They're here to create the legend, Jason said. If you're telling stories about an ancient order of assassins that got wiped out, you know what you aren't doing?
What?
Asking whether they got wiped out at all. I'm willing to bet that most of the story holds up, a coalition of churches coming together to hunt them down and root them out. But these were the world's greatest assassins. You really think that none of them got away?
Of course they did.
Some of them, at least. Then they created these trials, hid away the keys to open them, and started dropping rumors and stories, just enough to linger through the centuries.
You think the Order of the Reaper still exists?
I do, Jason said. I'm willing to bet they operate very differently now. Smaller numbers, different methods. My guess is that their first tenet now is secrecy.
That's why you didn't want us to go for the scythe, Humphrey said. You didn't want us getting caught up with the Order.
Exactly.
Are they going to kill us?
Probably, Jason said. I would.
Then why have the hidden trial at all?
To catch anyone who figures it out, Jason said. If people leave with a pile of ancient knowledge from an order of assassins long gone, then the legend of their demise carries on. If someone figures it out, though, they want to deal with those people. Only letting in Iron Rankers keeps out anyone who can really investigate this place. The scythe is bait, so some high ranker would eventually go to the effort of getting some Iron Rankers inside. The ones quick enough to figure it out, they can take aside and deal with.
Objective complete. Reveal the true purpose of the trials. One of one.
Jason sighed.
Sorry, Humphrey, he said. They brought you in because I refused to admit that I twigged to what was happening.
It was rather obvious that you'd realize something, Humphrey said.
Very good, Jason Asano, Shade said.
Is this the part where you